Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the pantograph for Tuesday, May 20th, 2025. We begin on the first page with Mental Health Awareness Month, Bloomington Normal Agency's aim to break stigma. Reports, officers experience higher rate of depression. In his first week of training as a patrol officer, Normal Police Chief Steve Petrelli witnessed a fatal scene that has stuck with him in the 26 years since. It was a head-on collision on the interstate, Petrelli said, of the 1999 incident. There was no follow-up for these type of things. It was just you went to the call and you handled it. Since taking over as chief in 2022, Petrelli has made officer wellness, both mental and physical, a priority for his department. He and other police leaders in Bloomington Normal acknowledge law enforcement officers historically have been expected to compartmentalize rather than address the traumas they are exposed to on the job. But that approach can take a toll when it is coupled with a lack of resources to cope with what they've seen. Officers and dispatchers have reported experiencing lasting effects to their mental health that can affect both their work and personal lives. According to a 2024 survey conducted by Police One, a platform focused on content, policy, and training for first responders, 83% of police officers reported their mental health affects their work. In the same survey, 16% of officers reported they had experienced thoughts of suicide within the last year. And in a study published by the National Institutes of Health, officers reported experiencing depression at a rate almost twice as high as the general population, attributed to traumatic events encountered daily in their line of work. As concerns for law enforcement wellness rise, local police leaders say they are working to break down the barriers and culture surrounding the mental health of officers and dispatchers and building support systems to help them cope with traumatic events. The Illinois Police Training Act, which was signed into law in 2019, amended police training procedures to include officer wellness in recognition of issues of mental health concerns and suicide prevention. Since then, sworn officers have been mandated to receive 8 hours of mental health training every 3 years. Law enforcement officials in Bloomington Normal agreed the biggest challenge when implementing wellness into their departments was breaking the stigmas surrounding mental health in their profession. I explained to them, it's not a weakness. It's just if you need to talk to somebody, we'll give you somebody, McLean County Sheriff Matt Lane said. When identifying an employee who has been through a traumatic experience, local law enforcement agencies say they provide support in several ways, including debriefing, time off, peer support, and therapy. We've both been here a long time since the 90s, Chief Deputy Hadley Welsh said, gesturing to Lane in recent interviews with the Pantograph. Needless to say, it comes leaps and bounds from 3 decades ago, where we are now in terms of prioritizing mental health in criminal justice. Bloomington Police Chief Jamal Symington agreed, reflecting on his years working in law enforcement. Back in the day when I started, it was you dust off whatever you were exposed to and you move on to the next call and the next day, and you put it behind you, Symington said. Sarah Vitzhum, a licensed clinical professional counselor, has been staffed full-time at the Normal Police Department for 2.5 years. Normal officers are required to see her annually for check-ins, during which she assesses if they need further counseling. There's a susceptibility to feel helpless in this field, and helping people to feel empowered to make changes, that's hard to do, Vitzhum said. She said she pays attention to the types of calls for service officers are responding to, as well as volume and frequency, which she said can also be overwhelming, to determine when an additional check-in is due. If officers want to use her services, Vitzhum said she is flexible with her hours to be available whenever the officer is, providing a person to talk to or just a quiet, safe space to breathe for a moment. Both Bloomington and Normal Police Departments, as well as the McLean County Sheriff's Office, have also introduced peer support teams, which is a group of officers who undergo a 3-day certification course through the National Suicide Awareness for Law Enforcement Officers program to provide confidential crisis intervention. Normal police officers also train through the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation. Everybody in this police department knows that confidentiality is there and it's adhered to, said Sergeant Tim Power of the Bloomington Police Department. The support officers are trusted resources for the officers to be able to debrief their emotions when dealing with a traumatic event or general stress in their work or personal lives. Additionally, each department has lists of about a dozen vetted mental health professionals to whom officers can be referred, the law enforcement agencies said. Symington also noted a local chaplain volunteer program that began 2 years ago works with the police department as needed. The more trust officers have in the system that it won't harm their ability to serve in public safety opens the door for them to be more realistic, to be more forthright with whatever their struggles are in life and on the job, Symington said. On top of the peer support of officers, Bloomington Police and the McLean County Sheriff's Office utilize an app which allows all employees to see the peer support members, vetted clinicians, and chaplains with personal phone numbers to reach out. In addition to helping law enforcement, these platforms are also available to the families of law enforcement, giving them the ability to reach out for help on behalf of themselves or their loved one. The McLean County Sheriff's Office also added a gym in their facility about 2 years ago. Exercise will surely bleed into your mental health too, Lane said. In the Illinois State University Police Department, Lieutenant Jeff Klepek is initiating a new peer support program this summer as part of his graduate program, in which he studies social work. This is something we have not had here at ISU. It gives officers an opportunity to seek help if they're having mental health issues, coping with various things in their lives. It provides them with an avenue, more or less, Klepek said. Though the program is in its beginning stages, Klepek said he has been researching and talking to colleagues from other departments, including Power, who helped lead the wellness unit at BPD, to get the program off the ground. We have an employee assistance program through the university. We have a health promotion and wellness program here at the university. So we are trying to encourage officers to participate, ISUPD Chief Aaron Woodruff said. Bloomington and Normal Police Departments and the McLean County Sheriff's Office also offer an employee assistance program. Local law enforcement officials said advocacy has led to more mental health resources and more attention on the prevalence of suicide among first responders and cops living short lives after retirement. When bringing awareness and resources to mental health at Bloomington Police, Power and Assistant Chief Chad Walmsley said healthy retirements have been at the forefront of their program initiatives. Walmsley, who is a fourth-generation officer, spoke about how he watched his father's and grandfather's wellness post-retirement from law enforcement. I've been really able to see the toll that this career did have on them, Walmsley said. You want to live the last portion of your life like the first portion was before you became a police officer. You don't want this job to affect it, and it's going to affect it at some point, don't get me wrong. But we want to keep that balance as close as possible from beginning to end so that you have that full life. The ISUPD chief also talked about issues involving retirement. We in policing kind of get into this role and we lose our own self-identity and become, you know, I am a cop, not I work as a cop, Woodruff said. Unfortunately, it is such a tight environment that sometimes we lose that sense of self. Woodruff said this can lead to overall wellness concerns. Petrilli also discussed what he calls the four pillars of wellness: nutrition, exercise, sleep, and stress management, all of which he said are not kept up with as their careers progress in law enforcement. The normal chief, who has taught officer wellness at a local, state, and federal level with the FBI, said he has incorporated what he knows into the department's core values. My job as a chief is to hire healthy people and help them navigate this 20 to 30 year career, Petrilli said. Because you get better employees that ultimately provide a better service. It's a win for the employee and the community. Symington echoed his words. We have to have a healthy officer, healthy dispatcher in order for them to thrive and to be able to provide a high level of services to our community. That's our obligation, our duty as an administration and as a city. We know it's important to keep our folks healthy. Vitsum and Klepek are part of a group of local providers who aim to educate first responders about resources available to help them cope with their demanding and sometimes traumatizing careers. In February, Vitsum and Klepek were part of a group of providers who participated in an event aiming to spread mental health awareness in law enforcement. They welcome first responders to share their experiences. In a recent interview, Vitsum said through her advocacy, she hopes to give perspective to first responders so they can better aid the communities in which they serve. Officers aren't just officers. They're partners, potentially. Maybe they're parents. They're certainly friends or a son or a daughter. There's a lot of different roles that we all play, and being an officer is just one part of that, Vitsum said. Next, Addison Wright with the Chicago Tribune writes, DEI crackdown threatens scholarships. Recipients agree to work in education. The Trump administration's crackdown on diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives threatens an Illinois program that provides scholarships to minority graduate students who agree to stay in the state and work in the education field. On March 31st, the U.S. Department of Justice notified universities participating in the Diversifying Higher Education in Illinois Scholarship and the Illinois Board of Higher Education, which disperses the scholarship funds, that the program, quote, unconstitutionally discriminated on the basis of race in violation of the 14th Amendment, close quote, according to an April 11th Department of Justice news release. After the Justice Department threatened to file suit, the state and six universities suspended the program, the DOJ release said. But Governor J.B. Pritzker, who included funding for the program in his February budget proposal, continues to support an expenditure for the scholarship as budget negotiations continue in Springfield, said Alex Goh, a spokesperson for the governor's office. A spokesperson for Attorney General Kwame Raoul's office declined to comment, citing an ongoing DOJ investigation of the scholarship program. The spokesperson did not respond to a request for details about the investigation. The DOJ did not return emailed requests for comment. Colleges and universities nationwide have been under fire from the administration of Donald Trump for months on a number of fronts, among them DEI initiatives, which the administration has said, quote, disregard merit and divide Americans based on race, close quote. The DOJ cited a 2023 Supreme Court decision that effectively ended the use of race as a factor in university admissions to justify its decision that the Illinois scholarship program was unlawful. DOJ's statement on the program said the scholarship used race as a prerequisite for participation, specifically excluding students of some races but not others in violation of federal law. Quote, this Department of Justice is committed to rooting DEI out of American institutions, including the education system, close quote. Attorney General Pamela Bondi said this in a news release on the scholarship program. At an unrelated news conference last week, Raoul, without pointing specifically to the scholarship, said that while policies must be evaluated to make sure they're consistent with the law, it's also critically important for educational institutions to not succumb to fear. He said if they do, they become vulnerable to continued threats from the federal administration. Quote, it's important to double down on the type of policies that prevent discrimination in the workplace or at an educational institution in the first place, and not to back away from those, close quote. I would say fight back. You can do the evaluation and continue to do and embrace the tools that create a diverse and inclusive workspace. Close quote. The Diversifying Education in Illinois Scholarship Program offers up to 4 years of need-based financial aid for minority students pursuing a graduate degree if the student agreed to accept a teaching or staff position at an Illinois higher education institution, governing board, or education-related position in a state agency when they graduate or leave their school. The scholarship is open to Illinois residents who are members of an underrepresented group, including Black, Hispanic, and Asian American populations, according to the program's website. The program was created by a 2004 state law that was passed after an IBHE study found that the, quote, presence of students and faculty and staff from various ethnic groups was very important in the decision of underrepresented school students to stay in school, close quote. More than $2 million was appropriated in the state's budget last year to fund scholarships at 14 universities in Illinois. A spokesperson for the Illinois Board of Higher Education said the remaining funds for the current year were dispersed to students following the DOJ threat. As the Board of Higher Education explained to the DOJ, there are no activities scheduled to take place over the next few months on Illinois' scholarship program, said Jose Garcia, an IBHE spokesperson. Illinois agreed to conduct an evaluation of the program and will consult with the General Assembly since this program is enshrined in Illinois law. State Representative LaShawn Ford, a Chicago Democrat, said he has been working with IBHE and plans to support funding for the program forward. But he said it won't include funding for private universities that withdrew from the program after the DOJ's threat. And here is a list of recipient universities who were awarded the Diversifying Higher Education Faculty in Illinois funding for the period ending June 30th. Adler University got $90,000. DePaul University got $69,000. Eastern Illinois got $65,000. Governor State got $123,000. Illinois Institute of Technology, $34,000. ISU, $70,000. Northeastern Illinois University, $65,000. Northern Illinois University, $160,000. Roosevelt University, $155,000. SIU Carbondale, $72,000. University of Chicago, $18,000. University of Illinois at Chicago, $603,000. University of Illinois at Springfield, $17,000, and U of I at Urbana-Champaign, $282,000. Kelsey Watznayer writes, McLean County cyclists to take Ride of Silence on May 21st. The 23rd annual Ride of Silence will be held Wednesday with cyclists riding from downtown Bloomington to Uptown Normal. The Ride of Silence is an international event in which cyclists take a slow, silent bike ride to honor cyclists who have been killed or injured on public roadways. Cyclists will meet at 6:40 p.m. Wednesday, May 21st at the McLean County Museum of History for a short program. Mayors Dan Brady and Chris Koos have been invited to speak before the ride. Participating cyclists will then begin the ride north, riding along Main Street with a police escort. They are expected to arrive in Uptown Normal around 7:20 p.m. According to a news release from the McLean County Wheelers, there were 41 bicycle crashes in McLean County in 2023. Nationwide, nearly 1,000 bicyclists died and more than 130,000 were injured in crashes on U.S. roadways. That includes 41 fatal cyclist crashes in Illinois. We are fortunate to have active and supported bicycle and transportation plans that focus on improving transportation safety for all road users, McLean County Wheelers, the event's sponsor, said. Wednesday's program and ride are free and open to all. Next, we have from Laura Ungar with the Associated Press, Gene Editing Helps Ill Baby Thrive. A baby born with a rare and dangerous genetic disease is growing and thriving after getting an experimental gene editing treatment made just for him. Researchers described the case in a new study, saying he's among the first to be successfully treated with a custom therapy that seeks to fix a tiny but critical error in his genetic code that kills half of affected infants. Though it may be a while before similar personalized treatments are available for others, doctors hope the technology can someday help millions left behind, even as genetic medicine advanced, because their conditions are so rare. This is the first step towards the use of gene editing therapies to treat a wide variety of rare genetic disorders for which there are currently no definitive medical treatments, said Dr. Kiran Musunuru, a University of Pennsylvania gene editing expert who co-authored the study published Thursday in the New England Journal of Medicine. The baby, K.J. Muldoon of Clifford Heights, Pennsylvania, is one of 350 million people worldwide with rare diseases, most of which are genetic. He was diagnosed shortly after birth with severe CPS1 deficiency, estimated by some experts to affect about 1 in a million babies. Those infants lack an enzyme needed to help remove ammonia from the body, so it can build up in their bloodstream and become toxic. A liver transplant is an option for some. Knowing KJ's odds, parents Kyle and Nicole Muldoon, both 34, worried they would lose him. We were like, you know, weighing all the options, asking all the questions for either the liver transplant, which is invasive, or something that's never been done before, Nicole said. We prayed, we talked to people, we gathered information, and we eventually decided that this was the way we were going to go, her husband added. Within 6 months, the team at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and Penn Medicine, along with their partners, created a therapy designed to correct KJ's faulty gene. They used CRISPR, the gene editing tool that won its inventors a Nobel Prize in 2020. Instead of cutting the DNA strand like the first CRISPR approaches, doctors employed a technique that flips the mutated DNA letter, also known as a base, to the correct type. Known as base editing, it reduces the risk of unintended genetic changes. It's very exciting that the team created the therapy so quickly, said gene therapy researcher Senthil Bhupan at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, who wasn't involved in the study. This really sets the pace and the benchmark for such approaches. In February, KJ got his first IV infusion with the gene editing therapy, delivered through tiny fatty droplets called lipid nanoparticles that are taken up by liver cells. While the room was abuzz with excitement that day, he slept through the whole entire thing, recalled study author Dr. Rebecca Ahrens-Nicholas, a gene therapy expert at CHOP. After follow-up doses in March and April, KJ is able to eat more normally and recovered well from illnesses like colds, which constrain the body and exacerbate symptoms of CPS1. The 9.5-month-old also takes less medication. Considering his poor prognosis earlier, any time we see even the smallest milestone that he's meeting, like a little wave or rolling over, that's a big moment for us, his mother said. Still, researchers cautioned that it's only been a few months. They'll need to watch him for years. We're still very much in the early stages of understanding what this medication may have done for KJ, Ahrens-Nicholas said. But every day, he's showing us signs that he's growing and thriving. Researchers hope that they learn from hope what they learn from KJ will help other rare disease patients. Gene therapies, which can be extremely expensive to develop, generally target more common disorders, in part for simple financial reasons. More patients mean potentially more sales, which can help pay the development costs and generate more profit. The first CRISPR therapy approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, for example, treats sickle cell disease, a painful blood disorder that affects millions worldwide. Musunuru said his team's work, funded in part by the National Institutes of Health, showed that creating a custom treatment doesn't have to be prohibitively expensive. The cost was not far off from the $800,000 plus for an average liver transplant and related care, he said. As we get better and better at making these therapies and shorten the time frame even more, economies of scale will kick in, and I would expect the cost to come down. Scientists also won't have to redo all of the initial work every time they create a customized therapy, Bufalan said. So this research sets the stage for treating other rare conditions. Carlos Moraes, a neurology professor at the University of Miami who wasn't involved with the study, said research like this opens the door to more advances. Once someone comes with a breakthrough like this, it will take no time for other teams to apply the lessons and move forward, he said. There are barriers, but I predict they are going to be crossed in the next 5 to 10 years. In health news, we have how to cope with ticks. Now through September is prime time for being outdoors and for ticks. Ticks are found throughout the U.S. and they thrive in grassy areas, fields, and woodlands. To find their next meal, ticks climb onto perches like blades of grass and stick out their legs. When a host, human or animal, brushes by, they grab on. They especially like warm, dark areas like our armpits, belly buttons, hairline, ears, and the backs of our knees. Most ticks drop off after feeding on their host, but while attached, they can pass along diseases, including Lyme disease, Lone Star tick disease, and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Left untreated, these infections can cause serious or even life-threatening illnesses, such as arthritis, heart, kidney, or lung failure, or a brain infection called encephalitis. If you've been bitten by a tick and develop a rash, fever, stiff neck, muscle aches, joint pain, swollen lymph nodes, or flu-like symptoms, see a healthcare professional promptly. If it's an option, consider an on-demand video visit for tick-related issues. Generally, the earlier you identify and treat tick-borne illnesses, the better. Don't let worry over tick-borne diseases keep you and your family indoors. Just take precautions when you're in the territories. Wear shoes, not sandals, long pants tucked into your socks, long-sleeve shirt, and a hat. Stick to trails when possible and avoid walking through low bushes and long grass. Keep dogs leashed so they don't venture to where ticks may be lurking. Repellents with up to 30% DEET are okay for children over 2 months old, but you should still use them sparingly on children under age 2. Apply them to the clothes and exposed skin, but not to the hands. And avoid products that combine sunscreen and DEET because sunscreen needs to be applied more frequently than DEET. And with that, we'll conclude the reading of part one of the Pantograph for Tuesday, May 20th, 2025. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with part two.